This is the State of Things, broadcasting from Blue Ridge Public Radio in downtown Asheville. I'm Frank Stachow. People love living in the mountains of western North Carolina, which partly explains the steady population growth in this part of the state. Black bears like the mountains, too, and their numbers have been on the rise as well. Black bears live on about 60% of the total land in this state, and these mammals have adapted to living near humans. There are about 1 to 200 bears living year-round in the Asheville city limits. This increase in bear and human populations has led to more interactions between the two, so how can humans and bears live peacefully together? Colleen Olfenbuttel and Justin McVeigh are here. They both work with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. Colleen is a black bear and fur bearer biologist. Justin, district wildlife biologist, and they are both here today. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yep. Great to be here.
Colleen, let me ask you about this increase. I guess I was a little surprised to learn that there's been an increase in the bear population. We're so used to bad news about the loss of species and animals that the fact that there are more bears, I guess, is some reason for us to cheer. But there are more, right?
There definitely are more. It's a wildlife success story in North Carolina that everybody should be proud of. You know, we do often hear about bad news for certain wildlife species, and certainly we need to be focused on helping to recover and restore those species. But we do have a lot of good stories for North Carolina. We've restored the wild turkeys, river otters, white-tailed deer, and, of course, the black bear through decades of work starting back in the late 1960s. Back then, black bears were actually considered to be maybe listed as a threatened species in North Carolina because of the decline. But through a lot of efforts, changes in regulations, ongoing research that got started in the 70s and continues today, as well as many other factors, we have seen where bears have recovered in most of their original range, not only in North Carolina, but the entire southeastern region of the United States.
I do want to talk more about interactions and what we can do about them, but tell me a little bit more about how this became a success story. What did we do to bring the black bear back?
Well, one thing is back in the 70s, we recognized the need to create designated bear sanctuaries in North Carolina. We were the first state in the country to do so. It protected about 800,000 acres of habitat in North Carolina. We still have those designated bear sanctuaries to this day. They're down to about 500,000 acres. But the whole purpose of the sanctuaries was to protect habitat, bear habitat, and protect those bears, so that hopefully on these sanctuaries they would serve as a source population for the surrounding area, which they were successful in doing so. The other reason is the bears themselves. They've shown themselves to be much more adaptable than anybody ever predicted. Back in the day, it was thought that they needed a lot of undeveloped land, forested habitat, which is a preference, but we've seen where bears are very adaptable, very good at finding foods, which is one reason we're seeing the increase in human-bear interactions is bears, they think with their nose and their mouth, and so they're constantly looking for food, and unfortunately, sometimes that's artificial foods that people leave around their house.
Yeah, so that means trash cans are great food sources, and porches are great places to have your cubs, Justin, which means more interactions and more calls for you. What kind of calls do you get here?
Absolutely. So I generally get about 500 phone calls just about black bears per year. And the typical phone call is a homeowner who calls and says, I've got a bear in my yard, it's in my trash, or it's in my bird feeder. I'm scared, I'm concerned, I have small children, pets, elderly, and you know, I want the bear to be relocated. And at that point, I kind of have to go into my bear spiel and just educate the folks on how to live in bear country.
You showed me a video just a second ago with three bear cubs looking pretty frisky and happy under somebody's porch.
Yeah, Colleen mentioned that bears are really adaptable, and that's what we're seeing. So I've been getting calls about bears deciding to hibernate in, perhaps to our eyes, not the greatest spots, but the decks and porches around Asheville and the surrounding areas are kind of those ready-made dens and just a perfect spot to have
cubs. If I give you a call, if those three bears, cute as they are, if they're on a, you know, if I get sent like an Instagram of those, they're cute. Under my porch, I'm scared to death, and I'm calling you saying, how do I get rid of them? What happens when you tell the homeowner, we don't think that's a good idea?
It doesn't happen a whole lot, but in most cases, the homeowner understands. They understand once I educate and talk about the, you know, black bear behavior, that they're not an aggressive animal. They're not looking to take your children or anything like that. They're just looking to be left alone. And in situations where we have a bear under a porch, you know, with cubs, generally that bear is going to be in that hibernation state. It's really not very active, doesn't want to move around a bit. And really the best thing to do is just leave it alone. Given the time of year now, those cubs will be gone and mama will be gone in around April. So it's best just to leave them alone.
Well, Colleen, let me ask you about this. So this hibernation state, maybe you can clarify this. They're not really sound asleep, right? They're kind of a torpor. That's one thing I'd like you to comment on. But also, I'm going to work every morning, and how am I sure that mom is clear that I really just need to get to the office? I'm not going to eat her cubs.
Yeah. Well, as I said, not only are bears adaptable, but they are much more tolerant of us than sometimes we are of them. As Justin said, they are very lethargic during hibernation. Yes, they can wake up, and certainly when we are doing our research out in the field and have to approach a bear den to maybe replace the collar and check on the cubs, we have to be as quiet as possible because she will wake up. But overall, they're very lethargic. They're trying to conserve their energy. You know, they're not eating at that time of year. They're not defecating. They're not urinating. They really rely on the fat reserve they built up during the fall to provide the energy they need, not only for themselves, but their cubs. So they're just going to, they just want to be left alone. And again, that's being lethargic and conserving their energy. They don't want to expend energy going out of the den and bugging you.
No, but she's going to do anything. Look, whatever happened when she had three cubs, that woke her up, right?
Well,
a little bit,
but you know, through the research, the tools that we have now, we've seen that once those cubs are born, they pretty much crawl to her belly where the milk is. Wow. And they stay there, they stay warm. She kind of pretty much remains fairly lethargic. Of course, she'll maybe wake up, lick them, but very low maintenance. View the den as almost another womb. You know, the cubs come out of her from one womb to another protective womb that protects them from the elements, the weather, disturbance from both people and other wildlife. So she's actually fairly lethargic, even with those cubs.
Well, and so what kind of advice, what about the den, Justin? Let me ask you this question. Are they going to come back and visit? Do they ever get nostalgic for where I was born?
Generally not. No. Generally, once a bear leaves the den, they don't come back to that same den. Of course, it's still going to be a good area, so other bears may take note of that and may come back. So we urge folks that if they've had some kind of bear activity under their porch or their house, that they reinforce those openings so that the bears can't get access.
All right. Colleen, what do we do now? Now that we know that there are more of us here, more bears and more people, there are going to be more interactions. How do we take maybe responsibility for this to limit the interactions, let's say, or is that the goal?
That is the goal. You know, a lot of it is just basic changes in your behavior and your habitat or your habits around your house. Our agency for years have really tried to emphasize personal responsibility with the public because really it's the public plays a big role in dictating whether there is a true conflict or not. With bears, it's pretty simple. It's really securing attractants around your house. We're implementing a BearWise initiative, not only in North Carolina, but throughout the southeastern states. And a lot of it is emphasizing the six BearWise basics. And of those six BearWise basics for how to live with bears, five out of six relate to securing attractants, such as pulling in your bird feeders when bears are around, securing your garbage so bears can't have access, clean and storing your grills because, you know, when you cook a hamburger on that grill, the bear will smell it, so try to clean up afterwards, and never leaving your pet food out. If you have to feed your pets outside, you know, if there's any leftover, bringing it in because those bears will key into it. And what we're trying to do is not only secure attractants, but try to create a situation where bears aren't being rewarded for being near your house. So you leave food out, bear comes up, it thinks, wow, this is great. I can get food near this house, and it's going to be more comfortable doing so in the future.
Well, you know, I can see the trash cans, and I know there are bear-proof trash cans and keeping it secure. That all makes sense. And the grill makes sense for me anyway. We don't have bears, but I've got some neighbors who just show up. So I think that's a great idea to keep that thing out of sight the best you can. But let's say bird feeders. I mean, what do you mean when bears are around? Isn't that the bear showed up because you had the bird feeder? So it's too late, right?
Well, it's It's never too late from my perspective. You know, if you have the bird feeder out and the bear shows up, yep, that's let the bear have the bird seed. Don't try to get in between that bear and the bird seed. But once that bear leaves the area, yeah, bring it in and just keep it in for the rest of the season. We definitely see in the summertime, you know, when birds are also more active, people like to put the bird feeders out to bird watch. But there's a lot of natural food available for birds. You don't need to put bird seed out to help support birds. There's a lot of natural food. So, again, we try to encourage people to pull those bird feeders during the summertime when bears are most active.
And then they're less active. The bears are less active. And, of course, it's more useful for the bird to have it out there that time of year. So, Justin, let me ask you about some of the other calls you get. I mean, there are reasons to worry, and there are ways to be around bears, right? What do we do to make sure that we're not sending the wrong signal to a bear?
Sure. So, you know, first and foremost is what Colleen has already spoke on, and that's just removing attractants. So if you do that, generally those bears aren't going to have a reason to come so close to our house. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do live in, especially here in Asheville, we live in great bear habitat, and we have our houses interspersed among that great bear habitat. So there is a chance that you will come across a bear. So if you do come across a bear, the first rule to remember is stop. Don't approach. Make yourself look really big. Kind of talk to the bear, scream and yell at it. Generally, that's enough to make that bear go the other way. If for some reason that bear doesn't go the other way, you just need to back up slowly and walk back into the house or the car. And then, of course, let your neighbors know that you've seen some bear activity, just so that your neighbors don't scare the bear and the bear doesn't scare your neighbors.
Speaking of the car, you actually got a call about a bear that was in a car. Am I right?
Yes, sir. And that's actually pretty common. So we have to tailor our advice to different areas. For how to live with bears. And here we tell folks that they need to act like they live in New York City and keep those doors of their cars locked, keep the windows rolled up.
Stop. The bear can open the door?
Absolutely. So they're very dexterous. And so we've had numerous instances where the bear, you know, they have such a great sense of smell. They smell that lost McDonald's French fry in between the seats. They go and open up the car door from the outside. And on occasion, that door shuts behind them. And I'm sure if the bear was given enough time, it could figure out how to get out and open that car door. But generally, it just scares the bear once it's inside and trapped, and it destroys the car from the inside out. So we had a luxury SUV where all the airbags were deployed, the leather seats were chewed up. So basically, the car was just destroyed from the inside out.
How'd you get it out?
I opened the door.
never thought of that.
So I just,
Did the bear come like right? How did that work really?
No, really, it really worked just like that. I made sure there weren't people around. Mm. I opened up the door on one side, walked around to the other side. As soon as I walked around to the other side, the bear immediately went away from me and took off running into the woods.
Do they prefer one car over another, luxury cars versus
that? I haven't noticed that yet. Keep some data.
You know, this really gets to adaptation, Colleen. I think bears are fascinating. We could do a whole segment just on bear biology, it seems to me, and just the little bit I've learned in the past 48 hours has been amazing. But tell me more about this adaptation, particularly in terms of diet. I mean, they are able to go through our trash and eat kind of human food. Has it affected their biology at all? Are they hurt by this? Helped by it?
You know, I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't at this point in time. We are going to try to look into that. I know that there is some research starting to look at how the amount of artificial foods that bears now eat, how that might be impacting their behaviors, even their nutrition. You know, one problem, though, with humans, when we look at nutrition in humans, we can study a human maybe 60, 70, 80 years for the duration of their life and have huge sample sizes. With bears, it's a bit more challenging. They don't live as long as us. Plus, of course, you know, we can't make appointments for them to show up to the doctor's office and take blood tests and heart monitors. So a lot more challenging, but there is some preliminary research being done, not in North Carolina, but in other places, that is trying to answer the question is what impact, positive, negative, or neutral, does all this artificial food have on bears? One thing we can say is it definitely can influence their behavior. They're getting rewarded for being in your garbage, near your house, and we have seen that leads to what we call habituated bears, basically bears that have lost their wariness of people. They're not aggressive towards people, but they're also not afraid of them. And so that's when we hear of habituated bears, Justin and I try to identify what's the source of the attractant and let's secure it because we want to keep our bears wary. It's better for them and it's better for people.
I mean, you think about 200 bears, maybe as many as 200 bears in the Asheville city limits. I mean, this means that bears have adapted to a diet of seitan and beer. This is incredible. And not only that, but they've taught people here how to eat nuts and berries in abundance, I've noticed. But talk more about, so I've always heard this phrase for a long time, this expression, if it's black, fight back, if it's brown, lay down. This is sort of what you do. If it's a brown bear, you know, play possum, and if it's a black bear, go ahead and hit it on the nose. Now, anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, there is. So with black bears, they see us as the dominant animal, really. And so if there was that freak chance that you had some kind of physical encounter with the bear, with a black bear, absolutely fight back. The bears will respond to that by going the other way.
All right. Talk more about the biology, Colleen. This is also fascinating, the way bears, for instance, the reproductive some phenomena, including the ability to store a fertilized egg until mama's ready, huh? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so black bears, their adaptations to the environment have been impressive, as we've learned. And so with reproduction, they will breed in the summertime. We see a lot of wildlife breed in the summertime, but unlike other wildlife, that once that embryo is, you know, fertilized, it goes to what we call the blastocyst form, and it kind of just floats around. We still don't have answers of what really it's doing, but we do know it kind of floats around, and then it implants into the uterine wall sometime, usually November. And what's an implant in November? It's about 45 to 60 days gestation before those cubs are born. And those cubs are born, again, in a den, again, in almost a protective environment. So it was an adaptation so that when these cubs are born, again, it's even so it's harsh weather conditions, those bear cubs are warm and protected inside that den with their mom.
Yeah, and she's more or less waiting to get to full size. In other words, so she has enough nutrients to really bear those children and make sure they thrive.
Yeah, in the fall, bears go through a phase called hyperphagia, in which they can eat vast amounts of food. They can sometimes double their size and weight. I once had a bear that was 130 pounds when I captured her in June. And then when she was actually captured again in late November, she was 290 pounds. So just amassing a huge fat layer, because they will rely on that fat layer to provide milk for the cubs as well as nutrition for the female and warmth, of course, if it's a cold winter. I just think, you know, if a person doubled their weight in half a year, they'd be lucky to be alive. But not only do bears do it, but they thrive. And so there's medical research being done to see what we can learn from bear physiology and how we can apply that to human health.
Yeah, that and hibernation, all of those things are really helpful for us if we could, you know, spend more time with black bear.
Yeah, I wish I could hibernate. Yeah, it'd be great.
Urban Bear Project, tell us a little bit more about that, Colleen.
Yeah, so the Urban Bear Project started about 4 years ago. We recognized that we'd been doing a lot of research on black bears in North Carolina since the 70s, but it was all on what I call our country bears, our bears living in more undeveloped rural environments. And again, we were seeing that more bears were adapting to the suburban urban environment, even living in those environments. And we know how to manage bears in the rural environment. We know how to manage human-bear interactions, as well as manage actual bear numbers. But these bears in the urban, suburban environment, we had a lot of knowledge gaps. So we thought, you know, let's start putting some tracking collars on these bears and learn more about them. We partnered with North Carolina State University, Dr. Chris DiPerno and Nick Gould. They're the people on the project. We're starting the second phase of that urban, suburban bear study in just a couple weeks with Jen Strulis, the new PhD student. But again, it's to learn more about these bears. You know, what are their movements? How are they moving through the developed environment? What are they eating? Are they having more cubs than we typically see? Are they bigger bears than we typically see because of all that artificial food that is available? So it's kind of going back to bear biology 101, learning about what these bears are doing in that developed environment.
Well, as you do, and as they move from rural areas to suburban, I wonder if it changes their voting habits as well. So we'll check back with you on that as that Urban Bear Project continues. Meanwhile, thank you. Colleen Offenbuttel and Justin McVeigh both work for the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. Colleen's a black bear and fur bear biologist. Justin is a district wildlife biologist. Thank you both for being on the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd love to be back.